Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In 1989, Hurricane Hugo blew through Charlotte and wreaked havoc on this town. If you did not live here then, you have no idea what we woke up to the night or the morning after that storm roared through. Suffice it to say, the city was paralyzed for weeks. What wasn't paralyzed was the city of Charlotte's reaction to the storm and the cleanup that followed. City and county government emerged with high marks. Another storm, bigger than Hugo, is taking aim at the Carolina coast as we speak, and though the path will be different and continues to change, the city is determined to be ready, and that's what Mayor Vi Lyles will spend a considerable amount of time talking about during this monthly visit to our program. Welcome back, Mayor Lyles.
Glad to be here, Mike.
And good, you have brought along a friend.
I have. You know, we went out and found the best fire chief in the United States. His name is Chief Reggie Johnson, and he has been operating as our emergency coordinator for city and county services, and so we're really glad to have him here.
So you're the point guy, Chief, on the storm, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So how do you get ready for a moving target or a storm that can't decide what it wants to do or where it wants to go?
You always plan for a worst-case scenario, and we have an effective team here in the city. We do good coordination and collaboration with the county as well.
This storm is being described as a once-in-a-lifetime storm, one that has been located farther north in the Atlantic than any storm that has ever hit the Carolinas in the past. Initially, it was to have roared ashore on our coastline and made a beeline between Charlotte and Raleigh. Now it's further south between Columbia, or lower than Columbia. And it kind of changes the whole aspect of what may or may not happen here. Do you think this is going to be primarily a rain and wind event, or a small wind event, but mainly a rain event?
We received an update this morning about the weather forecast. We will have some winds here. We'll probably start to see them tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We're looking at sustained winds, maybe up to 30, 35 miles per hour. Obviously, we'll have gusts a little bit stronger than that. But this is going to be a primary rain event.
So Hugo came through here at about 80 mile per hour winds, and it spent the night roaring through. The thing about this storm is once it hits land, it's going to meander up and down the coast and then go inland to the south of Columbia if it doesn't change. But it's very, very slow moving. So that means a lot of rain coming out. How much rain are you hearing? Yesterday I heard 7 to 10 inches for Charlotte. What are you hearing this morning?
Well, this morning we heard anywhere from 4 to 8, but there's going to be a band somewhere within the city that we could end up seeing that 8 to 12 inches. And the meteorologists are still looking to kind of determine where that band is.
So what does that mean? What to Charlottians, 4 to 8 inches of rain, what does that mean?
Well, 4 to 8 inches, you have to also consider this week we've received rain quite a bit through just our normal thunderstorms. So the ground is already wet and saturated. So when you start adding additional, even 4 to 8 inches, areas that typically flood will flood. If we're talking the 8 to 12 inches, areas that you may not have seen flood in past history probably will flood.
The problem with Hugo was obviously the wind, because the storm came through relatively quickly and went away. But the wind did significant damage to our tree canopy, to our power line distribution system. I think the only place that had power was uptown, and everybody else was out of power for weeks, literally weeks. People have no idea what that means. ATMs don't work. Your cash registers in stores don't work. Your refrigerator doesn't work.
No hot coffee in the morning.
That's right. I did my coffee on the grill. It was for 19 days. I mean, it was the 19th century here for 19 or 20 days. But because this is going to be a rain event, and because there is going to be some wind associated with this, if we have soggy ground and that ground becomes more saturated, does that give us a greater chance of more trees coming down?
I would say yes. Just because we don't have 80-mile-per-hour winds doesn't mean we're going to see less trees down. The ground is already saturated. 30 to 35-mile-per-hour winds, we will see trees down. we will lose power in certain parts of the city.
Mm. You know, Mike, the other thing that I often think about is there are a number of constructed apartments, apartment buildings that back up to our creeks. And when you have this amount of rain coming in and it's fast moving, we really need to make sure that anyone that's located close to a creek or a place where there's been flooding or prone to flooding, that they particularly pay attention to this event.
So people who have lived in these places for a while know, I would think, that that creek behind you is prone to flooding. Be aware.
Be aware, and also think about our kids. You know, this could be one of those things where a kid may think, oh, my gosh, look at that creek out there. It's just amazing. And the next thing we know, we have a terrible event. So parents and families, please take care and make sure that we work together in our neighborhoods to be safe.
Dealing with storms like this is one of the primary functions of local government. Mm-hmm. As I said, I wasn't kidding, that Charlotte really shone when Hugo came through. It was an amazing effort and a Herculean effort, and one that the city was up to and did a really good job with. I guess you were working for the city at the time.
I was working for the city at the time, and I have to say it was another example of where Charlotte really rises to the occasion. If you remember, we didn't have a place to put all of those trees that fell down, and the private sector created spaces for us to bury all of the trees that were coming in. I think the biggest thing that we, again, have to face is our tree canopy may be endangered by this storm.
Right.
And if we lose trees and they take down power lines, it takes Duke Energy a little while to respond. I was really impressed to see all of the trucks lined up on Independence Boulevard in a parking lot from our hometown utility company, and they've been with us every step of the way in the emergency center.
Well, that leads to a question for you from one of our listeners. With all the Duke Energy teams focused on the coast, as they should be, do you expect the Charlotte area to be understaffed, and if so, how much of a delay can be expected from Duke Energy if power starts to go out en masse?
I would say that Duke Energy probably has reached out to a number of other state power companies so that they can provide service to the Charlotte region. I think that they are going to be prepared.
Okay. How closely, because this is a major function of local government, how closely do you coordinate with the state of North Carolina, with FEMA, in terms of planning, and with the National Hurricane Center, for that matter, in terms of what you have to do to get ready for this?
So I'm going to let Reggie talk about some of the operational issues, but I want to say, first of all, we've gotten a message from the White House about the resources available through FEMA. We've also had many conversations with the governor's office, and our senators have stepped up as well. But we have to realize that this isn't an event that talks about who's elected. This is an event that talks about who's going to take care of our community. And I think that coordination is necessary and that we want to make sure it happens.
What did we learn from Hugo that could be applied to this storm?
Well, I think one of the things that's a major difference is that we now have a critical assessment communications plan. When we had Hugo, I remember Don Steger coming out and saying, I am the spokesperson for the city, and he did that the entire time. But we needed more than just one person to speak. We needed to have a plan for that kind of communication. And think about social media now versus, you know, just phones. I don't remember a lot of people having cell phones even then.
Right, we didn't.
And so we are now in a different situation where we have to worry about cell phone towers and how they operate, alternative ways to communicate. We need to remember how to engage people in the right way. We're still looking at our primary markets of businesses, houses of worship, neighborhood, next door. All of those things are very important.
And you've already announced where shelters will be in case people need to leave their homes. How many shelters do we have opening for this?
We will have five shelters open.
Okay.
We were primarily open for the evacuees, but they are still open to people within the city and the county.
Okay, so we've opened shelters for people coming from the coast. Is that what we're doing?
Well.
That is correct.
But they'll also be available to Charlottians should they need them. And they're at East Mecklenburg High School, South Mecklenburg High School, North Mecklenburg. This is easy to remember. North Mecklenburg High School, Audrey Kell High School, and the Mecklenburg County Shelter, which is at West Mecklenburg High School, is open as well. Are these open now? These are open now?
They are open now. I think the West Mech is being opened as we speak. But they are open at this point.
Because the schools
are there.
Because the schools are closed today.
Schools are closed today and tomorrow, and people have come in. One of the things that if I can mention, pets are a big deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really are, and that was an issue in other events. And what we're trying to do, if you need to go to a shelter, your pet can come with you. And so we are accepting people with if they bring their pets. And the other thing that we need to think about, if you've got your pet outdoors in a doghouse area or a, you know, a training leash or whatever, those animals need to be protected from high rain incidents as well. So figure that out. But if you need to come to a shelter, bring your animals.
Mayor Vial Isles is with us along with the Charlotte Fire Chief Reginald Johnson. We're talking about Hurricane Florence. We'll be talking about some other issues as we go through the hour. But a lot of people who were not here for Hugo, a lot of people who were here for Hugo, were completely blindsided by that storm in terms of what they should have done to get ready. And we'll talk about some of those things when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte Mayor Vial Isles is with us, her monthly visit, in kind of a different fashion because we're talking a lot in the first part of this program about Florence and what its impact may be on Charlotte and the environs as it comes ashore. Also with us, Fire Chief Reginald Johnson, who's kind of the point person for emergency preparedness for this storm. And you can go to charlottenc.gov. There's a pretty extensive list of things you can do. And also, we talked about flooding. I want to talk about flooding. You can go to that website and you can put in your address and it will give you kind of a graphic understanding of how prone or not your house is to being flooded by lots of water. Now, we're talking 7 to 10 inches of rain beginning around sometime on Saturday through Sunday into Monday. That's a significant amount of rainfall in a very short period of time. Flooding. What kind of tips do you have for flooding? I mean, we talked a little bit about being aware, if you're near a creek that is prone to overflowing its banks, being aware that that is probably going to happen this time, right?
That's
but what
correct.
Do you do if you know that? What do you do? Get out of the house?
Well, you just need to be prepared for that. You just mentioned the website, and you're able to go and put your address in and see how close you are to the floodplains, 10 years, 50 years, 100-year flooding. A lot of things you can do at your house is go ahead and make sure that your drains are cleaned, your gutters are cleared up. You can do those type of things. The city is already engaged in that, making sure that the creeks are cleared, debris is cleared from storm drains and things of that nature to try to help us alleviate some of that flooding.
Michelle on Facebook has an interesting question, too. Is the wastewater system ready and capable of processing this amount of rain during that short amount of time? We don't want sewage backup affecting people. So, of course, the sanitary sewer system is separate from the stormwater sewer system, but nonetheless, is it capable?
I believe it is capable. We have been meeting as city departments all week to be prepared for this amount of rain. And as you stated, the rain is going to come in from Saturday probably through Monday. So we will have some breaks in there when you're talking about bands of rain coming.
The city, I guess it's the city, is advising people to put together a go bag in case they have to leave their homes. And that bag should contain what you call a disaster supply kit that you suggest we have even if we stay in our homes. Mm-hmm. What's in the disaster supply kit?
Well, you should have water, you should have non-perishable food, batteries, lights. You mentioned before ATMs going out. You need cash because you won't be able to buy things with your credit card in certain areas.
Right. Water. Now, I read an article today in the paper, or I think it was the paper, it may have been on radio yesterday, that talked about people going to the grocery stores and cleaning out the shelves of water, and C-MUD is saying, I know that's not the new word, what's
Charlotte
it called?
Charlotte Water.
Charlotte Water is saying there is no reason to do that, that our water supply is not going to be impacted by rain or wind or hurricanes.
Right.
True?
That is true. That's what we're trying to communicate, that you can expect to have water. It doesn't run on an electrical system. If we had an issue, if our water
system...
The
pumps do, don't they?
I don't believe that.
It's all gravity?
They have generators in gravity and generators.
Okay.
So that would make the difference here. So we really want people to be prepared. I think more importantly is having flashlight and batteries.
Yeah.
You need to worry about anything that's powered by electricity.
Charge your cell phone.
Well, yes.
Well, because your landline, if you have one still,
would be
may not
in.
Work.
That's exactly right. It would be plugged in if people still have landlines. So charge your cell phone. Look at other devices that you may use, but also have a way to communicate. I really can't express the importance of our ability to work with our neighbors and to check on them and make sure that everybody's okay. If you have a prescription drug that you need to have on ice, get a cooler, get some ice, make sure that you do this. Go get your prescription drugs. The prescriptions filled at your neighborhood store. But those are the little things that we do every day we are not really conscious of. But think about how you get up every morning and what is the first thing that you do. If you're taking your meds, go get them.
This may not be a significant electrical outage event, at least not for Charlotte. But in Hugo, it was, and it could be, given certain circumstances. So let's talk about that for a second, because one of the things that emerged from Hugo was neighbors helping neighbors.
Yes.
It happened all over the city in every single neighborhood. People helping remove tree limbs and cut trees apart and cook out something in the backyard because all of your frozen food was going to go bad. So everybody had a cookout and ate. But one of the things that also emerged was that people wanted to bring their grills inside. You can't do that because of carbon monoxide.
That is correct. You should not bring your grill inside. You should not bring your generator inside. Devices like that, you're going to need to leave outside and make sure you keep them a distance away from your home as well.
Do you think that because we often, the media builds up these storms because they are significant and because they could cause horrible damage, and this certainly will probably along the coastline, when it doesn't happen to you, you see all these reports, but it doesn't happen to you, do you begin to ignore them? Do you worry that people ignore all these warnings and all this advice?
I think that's to their peril. But I saw an interview this morning, and it was someone on the coast, and he says, well, I'm just not leaving, even though there's a mandatory evacuation.
Right.
I think that what the mayors on the coast are saying is don't endanger our response, our emergency responders, by staying on that location and then calling for rescue or needing to be rescued. So I would hope that we take these events seriously, that we do listen to what's coming through on the media. You guys have all been great talking about it and explaining why it's significant. So when we say this is a potential flood event, and we say that our tree roots may be shallow and they may come down over an electrical line, we don't know where that's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
And it's not just electrical lines. Falling trees are dangerous. They kill people and they ruin homes. That's
true.
One of the big problems in Hugo. We had so people who were not here do not understand. We had a lot more trees then than we have now because Hugo took them out.
That
up
is
and
true.
Down Myers Park, those medians, all those are new trees pretty much because they all went and they were all over. You could, as you said, off the air a minute ago, you could not drive 50 feet without being stopped by a fallen tree. And those trees crush cars, they kill people. What do you tell people about that? Because if we have shallow tree roots, and we do, all of these oak trees have very shallow roots, and the ground is soggy, and we have a 40-mile-per-hour wind, and it just keeps raining, that makes these trees very susceptible to toppling over. What do you do about that? How do you protect yourself from that?
Well, at this point in time, it may be a little bit too late, but you definitely need to take inventory of the trees in your home, how tall they are, do they need to be trimmed back? That's something you can have
a discussion. It's a little late for that.
It is a little late for that.
You still have today.
Yes.
Go get out there and trim those branches back.
But if I could add one other thing, because we talked about water earlier. Mm-hmm. When these trees topple over, sometimes they rip up water pipes.
Right.
So then you do have an issue of not having running water in certain neighborhoods or homes. So that's one thing that we need people to be cognizant.
So if you're in a tree-y place where the trees might topple and rip up your water lines, it may be a good idea to go out and buy some bottled water and maybe fill up your bathtub so that you can flush the toilet?
I have heard that,
that
as
overkill?
Well. Yes, I have heard that as well.
Okay, because I know a lot of people do that during Hugo. If we do have significant tree fall or we do have and/or significant power outages, What actions will you take? What actions is the city prepared to do? Is Duke Energy prepared to do? What have we learned from Hugo about how to get this handled quickly?
One of the things that I think we're fortunate is that we have contracts with many of the tree companies, and we will utilize those contracts to make sure that we are out there as quickly as possible. And where we have our landscape crews that ordinarily may be doing mowing or other types of improvements, they will be transferred immediately into tree removal. So we're working, and the state actually has some folks that are working in terms of that as well. So we will mobilize the private sector, the people that are on existing crews at the city, and any other support that we need, we'll talk to the governor about it.
Several days ago, this looked like it was coming here with big wind and big rain. This morning, it doesn't look that way. It looks like we're going to be glanced by it. Are you significantly less worried this morning than you were Tuesday morning?
No, I think that these storms have been very difficult to predict, and you've seen the tracking. Until this is done, it's not over. And so we are going to work really hard with the information that we have, continuously update the information, and be prepared.
And when you get updates from FEMA and the National Hurricane Center and the state government, are they in the same frame of mind as you are? Are they saying, we're still worried?
I absolutely think so. I've seen the governor this morning on television talking about the evacuation and what the needs, and particularly the mayors of the coastal cities.
Right.
They have been out saying, please evacuate. Make sure that you're safe. North Carolinians have a beautiful state, from the beaches to the mountains, and we're going to try to preserve as much of that beauty, but not have anyone lose their life.
You can also get tips sent to your telephone, or at least warnings, alerts sent to your telephone, and you can register at Charmec Alerts by going to text. You can text Charmec, Charmeck, to 888-777 to sign up. If you do that, what happens?
You get the alerts on how the progress is coming, primarily around the storm's track. That's what you get so that you can react accordingly. But I have to say, on social media, the banks are sending out information. Mm-hmm. We got notices. We're going to fill the ATMs. You have a lot of people that are participating in this effort that probably you wouldn't have thought about in 1989.
We are opening, we've already opened five municipal shelters, fundamentally for evacuees from the coast, but they, as we said, they'll be available to locals as well should they need them. East Meck High School, South Meck, North Meck, West Meck, and Ardrey Kell. And the Red Cross has also opened emergency shelters, and the Men's Shelter of Charlotte has two facilities to house additional 100 men this weekend, and the Salvation Army is also opening shelters. We have this pretty well covered, it seems, do we?
Well, we have Tier 2 and Tier 3 shelters ready to go just in case those shelters get overloaded and we need to expand.
What does that mean, Tier 2?
We have additional shelters or locations that we've identified that are not in a flood zone, that have necessary power, that will be able to assist us if we had to open them.
Speaking. And, you know, can I just, on the homeless populations that we have, having the information from the count that we've done and having the ability to know that we have room in the inn that supports the shelters, I just want people to understand that if we all care, if you see someone in need, we can get them to a shelter, and you can help them get there. But our homeless population, we're encouraging to participate just like they would in cold weather. This is going to be wet weather.
And how are we getting that word out?
We're getting that word out. I think we've seen it through the Salvation Army and the shelter, men's shelter.
So
population.
People are actually walking the streets telling homeless people on the streets that they can go to shelters for this event. Teresa on Facebook, speaking of shelters, wants to know this. Thank you for making shelters pet-friendly. As an animal lover, this is something that can set a city apart as progressive and aware of things that can keep people from evacuating when they should, because people will stay to be with their pets.
A lesson learned, I think, from other major storms. We are going to make sure that people don't feel like they've got to stay because the love that they have for their pets.
And Michael emails, can someone please comment on how many people are actually using the shelters? For those of us having to negotiate child care during school closings, it would be nice to know the shelters weren't just sitting empty, because they closed schools, as I understand it, to use them as shelters, because sheltering people and having class are not compatible functions. So they closed the schools, and what he's saying is hope starts for a good reason.
I would say yes, it is for a good reason. Just remember that there's a wave of people that have been had to do mandatory evacuations from the East Coast that are moving inland. They're starting in Raleigh, and they're working their way to the West. So we will see some. We do have some in there currently. We will see more as we go through.
Because I haven't seen evacuation figures, the number of people evacuating the coastline. But there are more than 100 shelters now open throughout North Carolina, or expected to be open by today, according to North Carolina Emergency Management officials. That's up from 16 shelters holding about 4,000 people that were open in eastern North Carolina as of Wednesday. So the number of shelters around the state is increasing. Will people come this far inland, do you think?
I think once those shelters fill up, as you're going from east to west, we will be the overflow for many of the evacuees, as well as I stated earlier, for people here in the city and the county.
Remember, we're on the border.
Right.
So South Carolina's coast, the same thing. Columbia may be hit. So we are within an hour of Columbia.
Yeah, and Columbia will actually be closer to the epicenter.
That's exactly right. So I've already sent a message to Steve Benjamin, the mayor in Columbia, saying that we're going to be working with you and whatever needs you have. And I think our shelter needs will be important to the overall recovery process.
Yeah, because it's a quick drive. It's a 90-minute drive from Columbia, and they'll be closer to the brunt of this and may come up here to get out of it. There are other things to talk about with our monthly meeting with the mayor, among them affordable housing, and we'll come back to the storm, but affordable housing is what we'll tackle next when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and in our Spirit Square studio for her monthly visit is Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles, along with Fire Chief Reginald Johnson. We've been talking about Hurricane Florence and its potential impact on Charlotte over the weekend and what preparations have already been underway and getting some tips, and we'll go back to that in a second. I also want to go on to affordable housing, but I do want to have Mark's question answered from Facebook. What plans are in place for public transit? Will transportation be available to the shelters that we have opened?
Yes, that is part of our emergency operations plans for CATS to provide transportation to the shelters. And as far as just the normal operations, that is going to be dependent on weather, wind, and rain amounts.
Of course, this is probably a question for CMS, but schools were closed today and tomorrow so that shelters could be open for evacuees coming in from the coast and from places in South Carolina, because we're a pretty quick hop from Charleston to Charlotte. Will school be in place on Monday, or when will we know?
My understanding is that they make those decisions based upon the conditions that they have. So I don't know the rule, but it's usually early morning on Monday.
Because if the shelters are still open,
we will have to assess that and get the information out as soon. And just continue to go to the websites, and we'll be able to give you that information as we get closer to that time.
Okay. Charlotte City Council, a committee met yesterday mm-hmm. about affordable housing, and they were trying to decide whether to revise or eliminate the city policy on where affordable housing can be built. No decision was reached. Why? This is a sticky wicket. I know you weren't there for that meeting.
I wasn't there for the meeting, but, you know, whenever we refer something to the council committee, that means we're looking for an in-depth, research-based, data-driven decision to have for policymaking. So it's no surprise that they would have one meeting that actually gives a presentation of facts and data, and then for them to have a thorough discussion. Council Member LaWanna Mayfield chairs that committee, and mm-hmm. Ed Drix is the vice chair. Very competent decision-making that would come out when it does happen.
Because WFAE reported last month that officials believe this policy that they're looking at is outdated and conflicts with the council's goal of adding more affordable units. Are those your thoughts as well?
Those are my thoughts as well. When we had the locational policy, it was all about not concentrating poverty. And now we have a city where we believe that we should look more specifically at areas that would incent and increase the opportunity. So it was kind of a deficit position to versus being an incentive position. And mm-hmm. so when you think about where are there bus lines, are there grocery stores, is it along light rail, none of that was in place when we had the original policy. So
which dates to when?
Which dates probably to the late 90s.
Okay.
So we've never had a real question about it until we got the resources from the bonds projected as well as the private sector to participate. So we need to look at everything, the maximum utilization.
So they had this committee meeting yesterday. No decision was reached, and you said that's not unusual because it's a fact-based meeting. When do you think they might reach a decision? And if they decide to toss out the old policy, what will replace it?
Well, first of all, I always encourage all of the council committees to try to get information done within 60 days. Mm-hmm. So taking two or three meetings to really learn what you're trying to do and have a couple of meetings on how to discuss it and come back and inform the council of your recommendation. That's what keeps us moving. What we use to replace it ought to be based in the data that we have so that people that are in affordable housing are treated no differently than any other neighborhood or any other area.
Well, our Steve Harrison, WFAE Steve Harrison, says the new policy proposed by city staff yesterday would no longer say that some parts of the city are off limits for low-income housing. It would instead create a new scorecard that would rank new developments on whether they are close to job centers, transit, and good schools, and it would eliminate some heated public votes in which council members have to decide whether to allow housing in areas the city has said are off limits. So it would take some of the political pressure off.
I think that political pressure is gone already. This community has understood that we have such a problem with affordable housing, and that's all the way from the people that we're bringing in to work on the storm, our firefighters, our police officers, our teachers, and as well. So I don't know that the political pressure is there because, one, we're doing mixed income so that we have people at 80, 120 of the median income. So, no, I'm not too worried about the political heat.
So we've talked in the past on this program, and we'll talk about it in this hour as well, about the city having relatively few tools in their toolkit to encourage developers to keep affordable housing or even keeping current owners of affordable housing to keep them as affordable housing units. I guess I knew, but I've never heard it put in the words that Steve Harrison used in our report this morning, that the city would no longer say that some parts of the city are off limits. Are some parts of the city off limits by doctrine?
By the prior policy that was dated in, like I said, the late 90s, We said that we would not concentrate poverty. But that's not the issue today. Some of the areas that we would have looked at and not had housing are gentrifying so quickly that we'd rather have the people that live there stay there now. So this is a complex issue for us. Our development, our placement of housing, trying to define neighborhoods, we need to look at this as a new day and a different time. Mm-hmm. And different data points to make it successful.
So we have talked in the past, as I just said, about the city having few tools in its toolkit. By law, you can't mandate that certain developers keep a certain section of their new development for affordable housing units. You can't make them do it. You've encouraged it. You've put incentives in place. We've talked about this. Initially, those incentives were pretty much ignored, but then I've heard since then that some developers have taken advantage of them. How would you characterize that?
I would characterize this as an awareness that if you're going to have people that work for you in the city, you have to have a place that they can live, and not everyone makes six figures income.
Well, Henry Ford built Model Ts so that the people building them could afford to buy and drive them, which helped build the company. That seems to be an idea whose time has come and gone across the country.
I think it's coming back. Think about our health care systems. When we have an event like we're having now on weather, don't you want to have the people that are nurses and licensed practical nurses and people that clean the hospitals, the ability for them to get to work by taking a bus or walking?
Are you hearing that echoed back to you from developers?
We do hear that they
understand the problem and they want to be part of the solution?
I think that we are hearing that. I get that information a lot. But more importantly, we're getting it where we have naturally occurring affordable housing. People are stepping up and they're saying, how do we maintain these units when we see the development coming and the gentrification so that they're still affordable? And we're working really hard. It's a part of our framework to keep the housing that we have that's affordable, to build new, but you can't build your way out of it. So we're working really hard. We're looking at land purchases. All of these things are important to do if we're going to make a difference.
Just last week, the Cherry Community Organization won a $1.6 million verdict against a developer because that developer broke promises to build affordable housing on lands purchased for below market value. He went ahead and built, I guess, whatever they wanted to build. Does that send a message? Does that verdict send a message to other developers?
I can't speak to that contract and what it was. I'm not familiar with the details of it. But what I think the message is from the city is that we believe that we have to have a diverse workforce and that that means we have to have diverse housing options for people.
So you can't answer the question whether that verdict, that developer evidently has had some money troubles and they went bankrupt. They declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy last week. But if they hadn't, or if they could find a way to survive going forward, given this judgment, will they suffer other consequences other than the $1.6 million? Will they be less likely to be able to buy land on a promise that they would then break?
I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on TV. And so right now, I would say that that's not a question that I can answer. But when we do work with developers, we look at their track record for what kind of successful work that they've done. And so if this developer came in, we'd look at their track record.
Scooters came off the street this morning at 7:37 a.m. If you're walking around downtown and you're looking for scooters, you're not going to find them today because they were taken off the street. Is that because of the impending storm, or is that because you have decided to, I know that you've suspended or you've stopped the trial program, which was going to be, was scheduled to go through October before the city would make a decision on these dockless bikes and scooters. Is that because you've collected enough information, you don't need to have the program go forward, or the scooters not on the street simply because of the storm?
So there are two things there. First, we do not want the scooters on the street with the storm. You know, the sidewalks, the storm drains, all those contributing design factors to safety on riding or walking. And so we're doing the suspension for that. In terms of the trial period, we did suspend that because we had collected sufficient data. The scooter and bicycle issue has been referred to our Transportation and Planning Committee, and they're going to look at this. But what I say is we've got to have options for people besides a car, and we've got to design the physical space so that people can be safe. And how do we do that? Should drive our policy towards scooters, bikes, and pedestrian safety.
So another listener question from Weenie, who via email says, really hope we can get the city to continue to allow dockless bikes, scooters, e-bikes, and add a modest user tax. Whoa! That goes specifically to fund bike lanes, pedestrian improvements, greenways, etc. CATS needs to step up here. These options make light rail even more usable. What's your response to that?
I agree with you.
What about the tax? You agree with about the tax?
No, I didn't say anything about the tax, but I do know that we've had there are communities that have done the tax. So he's looking at other communities. But I always believe that if you can have all options for transportation, scooters, bikes, walking, and not have a car, yep, that's money in your pocket.
But we're trying to include and increase these options, mm-hmm, other than cars in a city that was designed for cars. And we did a program a couple of weeks ago on Vision Zero, which is the mm-hmm city's plan to end all traffic fatalities, scooter, bicycle, pedestrian, motor vehicle, mm-hmm, by 2030. It's called Vision Zero. It's an international program. And Philip was listening to our podcast on this, and he says, yeah, Charlotte government doesn't care about Vision Zero. It was all blame of pedestrians and no blame on cars, listening to our show from the people who were seated around this table. The representative from CMPD on that program said they try to educate, but in reality they give pedestrians tickets and drivers warnings at these stings where they arrest or they give a ticket to a pedestrian for jaywalking, etc. Vision Zero is a program of the city. You do support it, right?
Absolutely. When I was on the council, I was chairing the Transportation Committee. We adopted Vision Zero as our policy. It's aspirational, and we are looking at ways to implement it. You know, I tell people, you remember when people were speeding through the neighborhoods, mm-hmm, and we were just saying, well, how do we stop that? We could not put a police officer on every corner. So we put in four-way stops. We put in speed humps. This is about how to physically design our city that used to be so car-centric. Are we willing to give up a lane so that we can get bikes and scooters in? That's going to be the big question. So when people start seeing us make these changes and trying them out, we need to get the feedback. But I don't believe that we can do this without experimentation around reducing vehicular traffic.
So we have this storm coming in some form between now and the end of the weekend. And Reginald Johnson is here. He's the chief of the fire department, and you're the point man for this. Just some final thoughts for people, some final recommendations to people listening.
Please be aware. So listen to TV, radio, and definitely make sure that you have prepared yourself.
And get a battery-operated radio.
Battery-operated radio. Because you may not have power for your TV. So just make sure that you're aware of the situation, you've prepared.
The website for emergency information is charlottenc.gov, and you can also go to charmecalerts.org by texting Charmec on your phone to 888-777 to sign up for alerts. Reginald Johnson, Fire Chief, and Mayor Vile Isles, thank you for being here.
Be safe. It's our special city.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.